Phoenix FM.
Friday afternoon, we're Mike. Good afternoon, welcome to the programme. And I'm delighted to welcome Phil Ruck, who is the Chief Executive Officer of Brentwood Borough Council. Good afternoon, Phil.
Good afternoon, Mike. Great to be here.
It is. And we met for the first time recently at the Brentwood Business Awards. That was a great evening, wasn't it?
It was a fantastic evening. A really great event organised by the Brentwood Chamber. And it was great to be a failed winner, as I call it, in terms of a runner-up.
You were a winner. I said to everybody on that night, especially the young apprentices, you're all winners. You beat a lot of people to get there, and for you to be a finalist, because councils, let's face it, really are not normally the most popular people, and you to get to that stage was really good.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it's part of our philosophy. We're trying to change the way people actually think about councils. Yes, we have a load of services that we have to deliver, but if you look at it in terms of business, our turnover is about £66 million. And we actually have all of the ethos of a business. And in fact, we're driving through with our commercial venture. We're suddenly finding ourselves with about a £30 million investment portfolio. Plus, we've got about £87 million worth of assets that we're looking to invest with a joint venture partner. It's all happening. And part of our change in profile is to get people to think differently about council so we can attract that inward investment that we need.
You mentioned a lot of figures there. You're an accountant by background. You came in via the shipping industry, wasn't it?
Yeah, I worked in the container logistics industry, which is absolutely fascinating. I mean, in those days, you'd learn more about the balance of trades before any News at 10 statement that would tell you how we're going, because you would count the containers on and off. It's actually a fascinating industry to be in.
And you were appointed CEO in November 2015. I read your school report, really, if you like. the council made an appraisal of you. And the headline from that was what a nice guy you are and how you're interested in people. And you've brought in appraisals and commenting back to people how they're performing. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it's quite clear that, I was actually appointed on the 1st of June and on an interim basis and affirmed, again, very kindly by the councillors unanimously, in November 15, as you say. But we are a people business. It's absolutely care. I think what we have in relation to the council is something like institutional care. And I don't know any of our members of staff that actually not only deliver, but they care about the services that they deliver. And it's important that if they care, that you care about them. So it's important that you show through appraisals, through one-to-ones, and listening to them, that you actually adjust and change your operating model to reflect what's going on out there and what they care. It's a little bit of like back to the front in terms of a chief exec organisation. You have to do that.
Absolutely. And sort of describe, I know every day is different, but can you describe a typical morning in your office?
Yeah, well, it starts off for me around about 7:30, 7:45, because I normally get in around about that time, and we go through the usual emails. And then it sort of can be back-to-back meetings. But the essence of those meetings are so varied. They can be talking about budgets, they can be talking about multi-million pounds investments, we can be talking about the issues we have with making allotments statutory, we can be talking about litter picking, we can be talking about miss bins, we can be talking about customer complaints, we can be talking about successes, we can be talking about when we're moving back into the town hall. We can be talking about so much that actually, as you quite rightly say, there is no one day the same. And that's actually what makes this such a great job.
But obviously you enjoy it. What would you say was your biggest headache?
I'm not allowed to mention members, am I?
Well, you can mention what you like, I don't care.
No, to be quite honest with you, the biggest headache is obviously the financial challenge that we're actually facing at this moment. Everybody is aware of the reduction in central government funding, which means that we have to look at ways of creating income. Now, part of that is obviously increases in fees and charges, but the large part of that is actually trying to generate investment income through drawing down up to about £30 million worth of investments and looking at properties that would generate that income. So we keep and maintain those services. And I'm quite proud that over the last 3.5 years or so since I've been chief exec, I don't think we've actually seen a reduction in services. I don't think we've seen a reduction in headcount. We've actually seen an improvement in services. Yeah, we don't get everything right. But you've got to remember.
No, of course you don't. But that's such a difficult balance, isn't it? Because everybody's, I'll give you an example. I live in Havering. Green Bin Collection, for example, they've just put the green bins up from, I don't know, 30 quid a year to 60 quid a year, something like that. Something that I might be slightly out on that. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to do that anymore. And I know why they've done it, because they're losing income. But now they've lost my income completely now, because I'm not paying anything. I'm doing away with my green bin. Is that sort of a day-to-day problem, juggling figures just so you can try and maintain services?
Yeah, the sort of residue waste that you're talking about there is an issue. It's quite clear. For example, we are hit when glass recycling rates, we get a credit for it. We used to get £21 a tonne, we now get £1. If you think of the amount of glass, and I'm not assuming that everybody here drinks a lot, but certainly in Brentwood, but that reduction is something we take straight to our bottom line, and we have to react to that accordingly. So yes, to a degree, prices will have to go up. But what we do look at is how we can reinvest the money that we've got and use it wisely. And I come back to the scenario, if you have a look at our services, when I first started the job, we were ranked something like 300 and whatever in the UK for our development management services. We're now ranked 6th in the UK. That has not been achieved through any increase in cost, but it's been achieved through the goodwill of the staff and changes in management practices. Our environmental health for food licensing is still 6th in the UK. If you have a look at the RS and Ben service, we've just won a national award for our Res and Bend service. In other words, we're showing a picture that despite the pressures that we face, we're actually improving our services, and that's important. And we're always looking at ways that we can improve that.
You mentioned members there, but some would say that you've got an easy job because you've got a council there's little opposition, whereas your colleague at Thurrock, for example, you know, has got a nightmare really, because they're fighting all the time. There's no real fighting in the chamber, which must make your job a little bit easier.
Well, I think the most important thing is we live in a democracy. I didn't want to use this analogy, but I suppose I would be the Sir Humphrey of the council. But the difference is, I hope that I actually achieve a little bit more than Sir Humphrey does. He's the ultimate politician. But the politicians themselves actually have different views, and it's important that you listen to that. We are in a democracy, so therefore, just as much as there is a strong administration and they are in the driving and in the box seat, if you like, it's important that we listen to others, because every view is important. And we're in a situation where we cannot avoid or ignore people whose views are actually vital and important to us. If you have a look at the members across the piece, we've got bankers, we've got lawyers, we've got the police crime commissioner, we have got people from a vast range of industries and backgrounds. And if we don't listen to those, whatever side of the chamber we're in, then we're actually failing in our duty. And as officers, it's our important function to listen to what they actually require of us, and us to actually say, well, how are we going to do that, bearing in mind budget, our financial obligations, and our statutory obligations as well.
It must be also quite frustrating for you as well, where things are a little bit out of your control. You just mentioned the police and fire commissioner. You know, the fire service has been reduced in Brentwood. The police station obviously is closed, and that's been reallocated. Has that happened now?
Well, the police station, I would rather say, is shut from where it was, and it's actually now moved into the town hall. If you have a look at the town hall renovation, and in fact, it's quite a bizarre sight in one sense, because we actually have the blue lamp attached to the scaffolding as we're renovating the town hall. But we have something like, I think it's about 30 police officers working outside of that town hall. And sometimes it's very difficult to park when I go there for meetings because of the number of police cars that are left there by the officers that are out on duty. So I think it's important to stress that we work incredibly collaboratively. And a great example of that was actually during the World Cup. And we all know people get quite excited. I think we all know that we actually had a chance of going somewhere with the World Cup. This isn't a football analogy. But as we all know, where alcohol is involved, where sport is involved, where allegiance is involved, sometimes emotions overrun. We work tremendously well with the police and with our own enforcement officers and our lighting team, reminding some of the guys on the high street, this is your responsibility. And I think we only had one or two incidents during the whole of that scenario in relation to what happened during the World Cup. That's a classic example of how well we cooperate. Also, our team have done fantastically well in terms of helping those people who have been homeless on the high street. And I know that's a huge issue with everybody, but we've dealt with that in a sensitive way, in a way that people would be, I think, very proud to hear. If you talk to some of our enforcement team led by Tracy Lilly, you will understand the depth of caring that they go to talk to those people to see how we can actually resolve their issues. Yes, there are mental issues. Yes, there are alcohol-related issues. There's something you just can't click a finger at and solve. You need to really understand it. And that's why we cooperate with agencies. One of the things that I did is, as a Christian myself, is actually start to engage with the Christian community, because it's that voluntary sector that we need to work with to actually help us deliver many, many of our services. I think what Peter Jordan has done in particular, not only with the street pastors, but also introducing street pastors at the school kick-out time, if that's the right phrase, absolutely outstanding. And we need to look to be supporting that level of work. So it's not just us delivering services, it's how we collaborate and how we move forward with those guys as well.
I often think of Brentwood as almost a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, because it's a split personality town, whereas during the daylight hours, it's a busy shopping centre and attracts a certain type of people. Then in the evening, it completely puts another coat on and it becomes a young person's venue, doesn't it? Does that, you know, the night, let's talk about the nighttime in Brentwood, does that give the council many problems with its policing and its licensing, etc.?
Yes, it does. And again, I come back to the enforcement team that we've created over the last 12 months. They're working very closely with the police. We still have issues, there's no two ways about it. When you have young people and drink, unfortunately, it's not always a happy recipe, and we do get issues. We do have issues from time to time that we do need to take action on, but we will take action in terms of licensing. But again, I come back to our cooperation with the police, and certainly Tracy Lilly, our enforcement manager, and Lewis Basford, the area commander, have done sterling work in trying to reinforce that. We will come down and we will look at the parking on the pavement issue. We will look at what's going on in that particular area. But there are still issues and we still need to resolve it. But we also got to recognise that the changing shape of the high street, it's no longer the environment that everybody wants to come to shop in. The whole retail economy is changing for many, many reasons. And Brentwood reacts to that in different ways. Part of that is the number of tea shops, coffee shops and bars and restaurants that we have. So therefore, we're losing some of the retail areas. Is that right or is that wrong?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's not down for me to say. We have to deal with what we have in front of us.
And we're a town without a cinema as well, aren't we?
Well, you know, that's one of the things that we're looking at. I mentioned the investment program that we have going on. That is currently looking at about £80 million worth of assets that we have had almost on the shelf doing, I think the technical term is nothing. And it was quite clear that we have to leverage that, not only to replace the income, but actually for benefit. So we're looking at affordable housing so that, I mean, I have two children, they're both teachers. The pay is not exactly one that will get them driving a Ferrari anytime soon, but they need somewhere to live. They need somewhere where it's safe to live, and we recognise that. And therefore, this investment is not only about building houses, using the investment that we have to build homes. It's actually looking at what we can do for our young people as well. And that means that one of the first projects that we'll be looking at is the infamous William Hunter Way project, where we'll be looking at potentially a cinema there, looking at retail, looking at housing, looking at multi-storey car park as well. But we also have to recognise that when we're sharing that with a potential developer, a joint venture partner, that also has to be economically viable as well. So therefore, yes, everybody wants a cinema, but as was said to me even this morning, that even some of the young are no longer going to the cinema. So we actually have to look at that.
Times are changing, and the same, you know, do you need a bigger theatre? We've got Brentwood Theatre, which is, you know, a fantastic theatre, but small. Does Brentwood warrant a bigger theatre? These are questions we must ask. Anyway, I must check, let's just check on the traffic and we'll be back in just a moment.
Phoenix FM Travel News, in association with the Beaches Care and Nursing Home, London Road, Brentwood.
Yeah, rather quiet on the roads at the moment. The M25 is behaving itself, and except if you're coming in from Kent into Essex, because it's very heavy at the moment as you're approaching the tunnel. Problems on the A130 and the junction with the A127. Problems, a bad accident there yesterday, and there's still some delays as you're going along. Coming southbound, just onto the A130. Slow past Rayleigh, usual stuff, and slow into Chelmsford. The traffic is progressively getting busier as Christmas shopping gets nearer and nearer. Very heavy round Broomfield area as well this morning, as well as you come down the 130 down past Chelmer Village. That's very slow. Apart from that, though, it looks all right. More traffic in about 30 minutes.
Take a closer look at the beaches and find out why residents love living here and why staff love to work here. Call us today on Brentwood 690 300.
Friday afternoon with with Mike. It is 1-2-3, and I'm delighted to welcome back Phil Ruck. We're talking everything Brentwood, really. We've just talked about traffic. Let's talk about one of the big news stories that came out recently. Was improvements to Junction 28. Where are we with that? Is it happening? When's it likely to happen?
Well, as you know, Highways England have just produced the consultation paper, and we're very keen for that to happen. We think it will be a great improvement, and it, from our perspectives, it has to happen. That junction has to be improved.
Yeah, well, definitely. Yes.
You know, and the plans are there. Highways England have a commitment to it. All the plans are available online. Go and have a look. I think they're on the Highways England website. I'm not sure they're on ours, but if not, they will be after this interview.
I'm sure you, and the other news story road-wise is Lower Thames Crossing, which, are you really involved in that? It doesn't really touch your area, but...
Well, it does, actually, and in fact, the LTC guys, Lower Thames Crossing guys, have actually been to see us quite a few times. It does affect us in terms of the lower area of the council or the area, and that's because of the Junction 29. And of course we are concerned about inroads into that area. As you know, that through our local development plan and through many other offices, we're actually looking at developing a technology park just near to Junction 29, and we're just a little bit of concern. There's a little bit of a shaving off of an area, not significantly so.
You're talking about the area that was the construction site when they widened the M25,
isn't that's it? Exactly right. Yeah. If that's wrong, I will let you know, but that's as I understand it. But the long flow effect of joining the Lower Thames Crossing onto Junction 29 will just cut across that and might inhibit some of the access onto that site. So that's one of the things that we'll be discussing with them. We are on top of that particular issue.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this to other guests as well. I'm at the moment, I'm anti the whole thing. I used to live in Orsett. I don't anymore. And it would have come right through where I live, but I don't anymore. But I just think we've mismanaged the whole Dartford Tunnel thing. But it could be so much easier. And why are lorries still through the tunnel? Nobody seems to be able to answer me that. The correction lab was a fire officer there as well. Right, so away from that then, what do you think you've achieved this year?
Well, there's a couple of things, really. First of all, I wouldn't underestimate the impact of us moving out of the town hall. If you've gone past the town hall recently, you'll see the hoardings that are up. The building work is well on the way to, it's going to be finished around about March, April next year. The top two floors of that are actually going to be residential, offering about 19 flats. The rest of it will be offices, which will be kind with us, and also much needed commercial space within the area, as well as our chamber. And below that, we'll be offering a community hub. But that's the sort of town hall. One of the things, and I mentioned it earlier, is actually the completion and formation of our investment company, Seven Arches Investment Limited, which we call SAIL. That is so crucial to our financial future as an organisation. I've already mentioned the fact that we've approved a drawdown facility of £30 million to invest in buying properties, potentially in other ventures as well, but also this joint venture procurement. That is actually tremendous. And if you look at where we were 3 or 4 years ago, if I ever would have thought that I would have got that through council, or members would have agreed to that, members of councillors, by the way, apologies if I use that terminology, I would have said, no, we've got no chance of that. But so therefore, that's absolutely equally important. The other big thing, of course, as far as we're concerned, is the local development plan. Everybody talks about the LDP, which is a plan to try and build around about 7,600 homes within the borough within about the next 20 years. Now, getting that agreed in full council the other day is a fantastic testament, not only to everybody who's input that from an officer perspective, but it's a real challenging achievement for all of the councillors from whatever party and whatever bias you have. Because I have a look at Brentwood, and if everyone says we're 89% Greenbelt, the way I try and pitch that is actually we've got about 77,000 people living on 11% of the borough. Now, the majority of that is Greenbelt. Even if we go up to about 7,600 additional homes, we only lose 1% or 2%. Now, that's easy to say. And by that, I do not ignore the intense pressure that that brings upon people who will have a lot of housing surrounded them. So that is something that we need to do.
And the resulting infrastructure that goes with it, the doctor, the dentist, the hospital and the road, isn't it? All of that. I mean, how many, I've got one through my front door this morning, an application to build on Greenbelt for a new housing project. How many of those are in the pipeline at the moment, and how are you as a council to encouraging people to build on brownfield?
Absolutely, which is why I made the statement about the number of people locally will actually have homes built around them, because that's exactly what we'll be looking to do first. But there's another aspect, you raised something there very interesting, and that's almost half of our requirement, or getting up to that over a period of time, will actually be in a new garden village in Dunton Hills. Mm. Now, that will not only just be housing, it will be housing for everybody in terms of affordable, but it will also come with it with the appropriate infrastructure. That will be a through school, that will actually be doctors, that will be the application for dentists. In other words, that infrastructure that is much needed to support a new garden village like that will be there, and it will be actually a great achievement, because it will be looking at utilising our ability to look at green elements wherever possible. So therefore you will actually see a village environment which will be much desired, I believe, having a look at the plans. And they're available on the on our website as well, I'd hasten to add.
How frustrating is it for you when you plan a budget for a year for the whole operation of the council, and then from the funding from central office gets less and less and less, and you think, how much further can we go without making people redundant, without closing this and closing that? That must be a huge frustration for you.
Well, we're there now, if I was honest with you. If there are any, well, I mean, I don't think there can be any further cuts, because our revenue support grant is zero at this moment. So we're at that stage. And the most important thing is we haven't lost staff. We've maintained services. I think the issue for us as inflation goes up, and I'm not even going to mention the Brexit word, because we don't know what's going to happen to the economy.
I was going to come on to that in a little bit while.
So that there are situations where we're already facing that today, hence why we went down the joint venture route to try and invest £80 million worth of assets, which is why we've got the drawdown of facility to try and replace some of that much needed funding. So we actually become not financially independent, but we become more financially stable and replace some of that much needed income.
Let me just make sure I've got this right then. So the Seven Arches, etc., that's a private thing that the council have set up to try and increase funds that they've lost from central government, basically.
Well, I mean, it's whether it's the loss of central government, I would say it's a reduction in income generally.
Yeah, okay, and so you're forced to go outside to try and make some money. You virtually set out a stall to try and get some extra incoming, because to maintain the services you've got to get some extra funding in.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. But I also say, if you have a look at some of the things that we're doing, and I look at some of the fantastic things that we've got, the leisure strategy that we're producing in terms of having a look at the revamp of King George's and some of the areas we're looking at in terms of the play areas. If you have a look at the new play area up in Morley, absolutely fantastic, £235,000. So despite all of those pressures, we continue to deliver, and we continue to deliver for the community, because if we lose our focus on delivering for the community, then we just turn into a stock standard. No, we can't do it, mate. And that's what nobody wants.
Somebody might say, what if it goes wrong? What if you suffer a heavy loss if Seven Arches loses money? Well, where are you then?
Okay, what else can
we
do?
And I'm not an accountant. I don't know. I think it's a great idea, personally, but I'm just wondering what happens if it goes wrong. Have you put a backstop, to use that terrible word, in place? You're an accountant, I'm not, but what if it fails?
There's a couple of things. Firstly, bearing in mind the it's the standard thing with shares, isn't it? They can go up and they can go down.
Of course, yeah.
What we do is we take a lot of time with any investment that we make. We look at elements of business which are guaranteed. We look at the returns that we get. We are fortunate in that we can borrow relatively cheaply from the Public Works and Loan Board. But that doesn't mean that we should actually make rash decisions in terms of investments that we consider exceptionally risky. What it does mean is we evaluate things carefully, because I always look at investments and I always tell my team that actually, if this was your money, would you do it? Mm. And if after that we still do it, then that's our attitude, because it actually tries to mitigate that risk. Does it mean that that organisation will be there in 20 years? I don't know. Will I be there in 20 years? I don't know. No. But what we can actually say is every time we make an investment, we don't do it lightly. We have a full investment appraisal. We look at that risk and we try and guarantee it. For example, if there's an office building that we purchase and we've got an eight-year-old an eight-year-old, an eight-year. It'd be good to have an office with an eight-year-old running it, wouldn't it? And what I mean is an eight-year-old tenant with an eight-year guarantee. And that's pretty good. But even if they fold, our second question is, what can we do with that building? Could we convert it potentially to some accommodation to make it residential, so that in the longer term we still get a return on it and we get our money back? Those are the things that we look at all the time. So we're not just going out and investing in things that are risky businesses. We don't buy products, so we're not into that. We're actually looking at assets that we can purchase that give us a return. We're not into speculation, and I think that's the key thing here.
It's you worried me a bit a minute ago when you just said we're there now, we're at rock bottom, as various police chiefs around the country saying we cannot cut any further, that is it, we're done. How far are you away then, if things don't get any better next year, than being forced to put an above average increase in council tax?
Well, it's an interesting, when you say above increase in council tax, at the moment we can put our council tax up by something like 2 or 3% or £5, the maximum of the two. Now, that's £5 a year. That's less than two cups of Costa flat white. And yeah. I don't mean that Costa's expensive, so...
Well, it is,
yeah, it most probably is. But the point being that our ability to generate income from that level of council tax is limited. In fact, actually, if you look at the generation of the additional homes that I spoke about, that will actually help us in time. But of course, there's an increased cost of services that are being provided to it. I am firmly of the belief that we have a way out of the maze. We have a way through these investments that we're making that will actually help us to do it. Otherwise, you're quite right. If that doesn't happen and the economy turns against us, businesses fold, business rates go, etc., then we will be forced to look at things again. I prefer not to look at that, not in a blind way, but actually recognising that we've got things in place that we think will succeed and avoid us going down that particular route.
It's a juggling act, isn't it, all the time for you? How to pay Peter, pay Paul, and just get as much revenue as you can. We did mention the dreaded B word, and we're going to have to mention the dreaded B word.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows what's going to happen. And are you actively planning now for a no deal, or are you planning for some sort of deal, or are you doing nothing?
Well, to be quite honest with you, I went along to a seminar on Tuesday about Brexit, and the key things that came out from that was really watch this space. Now, I've studied lots of other councils who are preparing for food wars, riots on the streets and various other things. I don't think it'll get to that level. But we do need to be conscious of the need to react. And I think as an organisation, we have created something that is actually fleet of foot and can react to circumstances. The issue that I have is, and I'm not going to delve into the political scenario, but of course we have a deal on the table. That table has yet to be ratified by Parliament. I think it's on the 11th of December. That vote will be taken. Come and ask me after the 11th of December and I'll tell you what exactly we have to do. But are we planning anything specifically? No, because I don't think things will radically change. Funnily enough, if you talk to many of the market traders up in London, they're actually not looking at anything spectacularly changing either at this moment. So we need to be careful. There are obviously impacts on our services. There are things like food labels which need to be changed. There are things like if we have to go through things like procurement exercise, which are above certain levels, then where we used to have to advertise in a European journal, do we have to now advertise in a UK journal? So there are practical things like that that we're aware
of. Or a worldwide journal.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. Until central government actually say, no, this is what you're going to have to do, we're ready to react to those. But actually, if you have a look at the complex issue of food labelling, so we've got to learn that from, say, the 12th of December all the way through to March, April. I don't know whether that's practical. I don't know whether they've even considered that. So all of these things have to be done, and I have to talk to our food licensing guys, quickly get on those training courses to absorb everything that you have to do. It's the same with many other areas of legislation. But I think we will be adopting many areas of UK, of European legislation into the UK, and we've adopted it. So therefore, the change in itself has to be fully explained to us at this moment. And we're ready to react, but... Please, can somebody tell us exactly what it is we need to do?
Exactly, because it's going to be the Prime Minister's deal or a no deal or stay in, God forbid, then you've got work to do, haven't you?
Yes, we have.
You've got a lot of work to, unless we stay in, of course, which would be...
Well, it all depends on the timescale at which we actually do switch, of course. So yeah. If we are talking that we're out theoretically on the 29th of March, but there is a timescale by which we will still adhere to certain policies and procedures, then we will go with that flow and that will give us more time. But central government and the police, certainly, I know that the LGA, the Local Government Association, is very much on our side and pushing central government for some of these decisions. And we are starting to react to some of those, but there's nothing significant at this moment.
You still enjoy going into work every day. Every day is a challenge for you. Going back to austerity a little bit as well, you're having to do more and more work with other councils. Are you sharing legal services? Are you sharing some transport service? What are you doing? Working with Thurrock or maybe with Chelmsford Borough Council, etc.?
Well, my view has always been we'll work with the best. We need to offer our residents the best services that we possibly can, and that's the mantra. But the people that we have in Brentwood, you know, the guys I work with, my colleagues, if you like, absolutely fantastic. They have an appetite for delivery of service, which I just haven't seen in any organisation before. And I would hold us up against pretty much any other borough, certainly within Essex, as some of the best guys I've seen. But that doesn't mean we're perfect. It does mean that we continue to learn. And that does mean, for example, in certain areas like revs and benefits, Basildon weren't necessarily the best of breed, but they had the better systems and the better processes, and we merged our services in that particular area. If you have a look in other areas, Thurrock have helped us out with our planning development, and we've also helped us out with our environmental services as well. We look to Essex to help us out with issues that we have with travellers. That doesn't mean that we lose jobs. What it does mean is we learn from others and we absorb that. So we do have some management arrangements, but we're still operating those services ourselves. They're still within our domain and we still have that ability to control what we do. And that's most important to me. That's why we're now sixth in the UK for our development management piece. That's why we won the award for partnership working with revenues and benefits, and that's why we'll continue to strive. There are areas I know we have to improve. I'm not daft, I know that, but if you have a look at the services, the hundreds and thousands of services we offer every day, the complaints we get, very, very minimal. Doesn't mean we ignore them. Doesn't mean they ignore them. But you have to get that balance right. You know, it's the age-old thing, isn't it? Everybody's very quick to complain, but slow to praise. Mm. And I've always pitched a council, certainly our council, is the fourth emergency service. I've tried the police, I've tried the fire, I've tried the ambulance. Well, they ain't helping. I'll try the council.
Okay. Final question on libraries. In the news quite recently, that Essex County Council is closing lots of libraries. What's your opinion? What's happening in Brentwood with libraries? Because they are under pressure.
They are under pressure. They are a cost. I mean, we actually tried about 2 years ago to get the Brentwood Library positioned in with a town hall. Why? Because I think the whole face of libraries and the way they operate is changing. They're now almost a community centre.
I've got to agree with you, because when you and I were young, and let's face it, really, that's the last time I properly used a library was as a child, because... Sad to say, I just don't use it anymore. I still read books, but I buy books. I don't borrow books anymore. I always used to be late taking them back. People don't hire CDs or DVDs out of them anymore, and it just seems people go in there to use it for the internet. And now most people got the internet, so it's a struggling service.
It is an environment that's a community asset, but that community asset has a load of reference books. There are a number of people, because of disabilities, because of sight issues, etc., and even hearing, will still turn up at the library, quite rightly, and access services that they need to. But if you have a look at the displays when you go into the library, they'll be talking about groups meeting there, they'll be talking about book readings and various other things. But the whole emphasis is that maybe not so much on the books, but as a community centre where people gather and learn. And I think that's where we need to look at the change in emphasis. I've had a Kindle, had it for years. Mm. My wife getting annoyed with me because I keep reading it on the phone when she's talking to me. You know, I shouldn't have admitted that on air, should I really?
No, you shouldn't.
But yeah, okay, well, I'll pay for that later. But it's all these sort of things that actually change the whole focus of the library. And I think what we see, Essex County Council, who run our libraries, have actually recognised that and have adjusted to that need. How you actually replace the book element with the community element is the next challenge.
talking of challenges then, does it frustrate you that, do you ever see a time when you can think, do you know what, we can afford that new nursery school, do you know what, we can afford that swimming pool, that's new cinema, can you see a time in the near future?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I was in a meeting on Monday when we were looking at the leisure strategy, and because of the nature of where we are, we're already looking at great things. We're talking about new play facilities. We're talking about new environments for people for exactly that leisure environment. And that is because we're thinking about how we can work through the issues that we have for the benefit of the community. All the investment opportunities that I spoke about earlier aren't to keep me in a job. They're actually to provide service. I mean, I hope they do keep me in a job, but they're all to provide services for the community. And the number of councillors that I have spoken to and said, well, if we don't, and if we lose the focus on those community services, we might as well just give up, become a limited company, outsource the lot. Nobody wants that, because we're here to deliver that new swimming pool. We're here to deliver those new pitches, those new changing rooms, that soft play, the basketball courts, and environments where people who are elderly and disabled can feel comfortable and can feel at home. That's the most important thing.
Final question. How does Phil relax?
Do you know...
When do you turn off? Or can you turn off?
Well, it annoys my wife intensely, because over the years I've developed this compartmental brain, because the work never stops. You get emails at silly o'clock and various other things. And I'll look at it and go, right, yes, I'll answer that. No, I won't, and go away. But in terms of relaxation, I do read a lot. I'm a great rugby fan. After a few pints, I'll tell you, I almost played for England. Well, I didn't. I used to referee there, so I'm a great, you know, rugby is my be all and end all. And you spoke about West Ham, been following West Ham since I was knee high to a grasshopper.
Okay.
And I do a lot of walking, a lot of close friends, and we're always looking at things to do. I went down the orbital helter skelter just the other day, so we're always looking at stuff to do and to just enjoy life, to be quite honest with you.
Phil, thank you so much. As you've mentioned a couple of times, we need to ask me that later. I'm going to ask you that later. You'd be very welcome to come back in the near future.
Look forward to it. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Certainly.
I have.
Phil, thank you very much indeed. Thank you. And this will be available, if you missed the first bit or whatever, it will be available on our website later on. Thank you.